This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. We usually tape in the offices of Raider, but today we're taping at my home. But I do want to thank Raider, a hands-on IT service provider that integrates all of your needs for advanced technical support, effective communication options, and cybersecurity. Raider's motto is, you just want it to work, we understand. Please visit RaiderSolutions.com for more information. I'd like to thank Iberia Bank, our premier sponsor. They support our community in so many ways, and their dynamic team is committed to serving the banking needs of clients in this region and throughout the southeastern United States. Iberia Bank offers the resources of a national bank with the personal touch of a community bank. Please visit IberiaBank.com for more information. The generosity of Lafayette General Health also makes this podcast possible. Lafayette General has been a leader in telemedicine. With the Health Anywhere app, your family can access quality urgent care at any time without an appointment, all from the comfort of your home. It's the waiting room redefined. Download the app today at lghealthanywhere.com. David Callicott is our guest today. David has served as CEO and president of Lafayette General Health System for 12 years. As president, he presides over the largest healthcare system in Acadiana, encompassing a 10-parish area. David, your hospital system is weathering a storm that appears to be unrelenting. I appreciate the time you're taking today to share your thoughts on how the COVID-19 pandemic is affecting healthcare in our region and how Lafayette General Health is facing this challenge. Welcome back to Discover Lafayette.
Well, it's good to be here, and certainly look forward to sharing thoughts and messages in regard to the pandemic, but also kind of updates on Lafayette General.
Yeah. Well, it's been about a year, I think, since I had you on the show, and who could have foreseen this? We were really focusing on telemedicine, the strides that Lafayette General has been undertaking. And since our interview, I know that there's been a plan to merge with Ochsner too. So we've got a lot to talk about. But one of the first things I wanted to ask you is, I live right by Lafayette General. I live about four blocks from the main hospital. If we can just start there, is it safe to walk into a hospital right now?
So I live very close to the hospital as well. So right in the neighborhood, and love the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So the answer to the question is absolutely it is. And I think, as long as folks are doing, doing the right thing, making good choices, wearing a mask, washing their hands, mm-hmm. Not touching their face, we have put in all kinds of safety protocols, cleaning protocols throughout the facility. We're screening folks. And so I think the reality is you're safe. And we have made sure that as we're taking care of COVID patients, which today we have, over 100 COVID patients in the main campus, that we have, we have those patients in units where they're separate from other patients. And then also, within Lafayette General, we have the ability, because we have so many campuses and so many hospitals, we've been able to move a lot of elective cases. We're still doing them, but we're doing them over at LG Ortho, and we're doing them at Lafayette General Surgical Hospital, so they're not in the main campus. And so, the important thing for that is, as the level two trauma center for this entire region, from the base to the Texas border, we want to make sure we're available for those really critically ill patients, but also still be able to provide, the elective cases and those type of things in the community that people need. Come to the hospital, and and if you're ill, come to the emergency department. Don't delay care. And so what we're fearful of is that people are delaying seeing the doctor, they're delaying coming to the emergency department. And that's quite frankly.
That's what I've been afraid of too. When you hear of someone passing away from a heart attack, you wonder lately, are they just waiting because they're not sure they're having a heart attack, and then they wait too long and because of their fear of going to a hospital. So I'm glad you said that. So if I was needing a knee replacement or, you know, would y'all be sending me, you'd be sending me over to the orthopedic hospital and not in Lafayette General. I would not be going to your...
Yeah, and that was one of the reasons why we opened up one, you know, the first orthopedic only facility in the region, and that was to do those cases in an area where we have, you know, employees that's what they do. They do orthopedics, and so absolutely, if it's a hip, if it's a knee, you know, we're doing those cases at LG Ortho as we have in the past, but we're doing even more sort of outpatient and elective cases over there now due to the pandemic.
Right. What about car wrecks? If someone's in an accident and they're in the region of the main campus, will the ambulance bring them there, or will they be choosing another facility at this point?
So we're blessed to have what's called LEARN, which is a Louisiana Emergency Response Network, and they sort of evaluate and kind of manage the trauma cases throughout the state. And so they know if we happen to be on diversion, we're typically not on diversion for trauma. And so, you know, as long as we have the capability and capacity to take care of the patient, in our region, they send them to us. Now, if it's something that we don't have a specialist that can cover, then the patient would be transferred to a level one trauma center, which has services that perhaps we don't have or don't have available. But, you know, from an emergency standpoint, from a trauma standpoint, we're here and we're open and we're ready to take care of patients.
Okay. There's been a lot in the news, and I know that Dr. Amanda Logue, your chief medical officer at Lafayette General, was quoted as saying that staffing is an issue, and it's not just at Lafayette General or Lourdes or other places. It's a national issue. Would you address that and what is going on with staffing? I know it's an issue.
Well, the first peak of this virus, which was sort of March, April, and we really peaked on April 13th. The difference between then and now is that we didn't have a lot of community spread of the virus. And so we had very few nurses, very few healthcare workers out during the first peak. This peak that we're in today, where we have over 140 COVID patients throughout our entire system. We had 79 back then. What's different is now we have a lot of staff that are out that are COVID positive and sick. And so one of our limiting factors in terms of the number of beds that we have available is simply the fact that there's not enough nurses for us to keep all the entire unit open. And so as of today, I think our number is like 86 employees that are out with COVID. And so the problem is not only when they're out, it's also when they come back. And so, you know, they're out for a couple weeks, you know, and folks are coming back after you have this and you're fatigued and you don't have as much stamina as before. And so, you know, so we're being very careful and cautious about, you know, the shifts and the work that the folks are doing once they're able to come back. So we're working really hard to get contract staff. And we actually this week we have 8 nurses starting that are from outside the region. And really, you know, excited to have a number of people coming back from being ill. But that's the biggest issue is that there's a lot more community spread. And so we've had to deal with more employees being out.
Is the 86 that are out, is that system-wide or is that at Lafayette General?
It's system-wide.
Okay. Yeah. I know when I've traveled before, it's fun. I'll meet nurses. They're always adventurous, it seems. And some, you know, around the country, we've met a lot of contract nurses that do travel the country to meet needs. Are you finding that people that have been retired are coming back, or is it just you're looking just for currently active staff?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some of that. I think that there are, you know, obviously hospitals are having to go out and supplement their staff because we're, you know, we've increased beds. We've increased beds in our ICU. We're right now looking at how we can add more additional med surg beds across the system. And so you have to hire staff to do that. And so it is certainly a situation where, you know, folks that want to do that sort of thing, take care of these type of patients and are willing to travel and relocate, it's an opportunity for them. And obviously, you know, we're paying a premium for that. And because for us, it's about meeting the community need,
right,
and being able to take care of the patients that, that are in our community. And so, you know, I think, while we don't necessarily, we prefer to have our own employees just because of our culture and everything we do in terms of with Banks Lafayette General unique. There are times when, you know, we simply have to go out and get contract staff. Mm-hmm.
Are you in your office today?
Yes.
You are at the hospital? Yeah. I mean, the office is right by the hospital.
Yeah.
I know you've been hunkered down like the rest of us. What are you doing to keep yourself healthy? I know you've got a treadmill desk. I guess you still use that.
Yeah, it's right over here.
Yep. So but you've been working from home, I know, a lot, like most of us.
Yeah. Yeah. And so certainly, I think all of us, self-care is just so important right now because there's so many stressors, and I think exercise, meditation, certainly are things that we all need to be doing and taking time to do that. And so, you know, I certainly play a lot of tennis and play golf. And the one thing that's been great about, and it's hard to say that there's been anything great about this experience, but living so close to Girard Park, mm-hmm, and seeing that park be so busy with so many people that are doing, you know, they're walking, they're spending time outdoors and exercising and far, far more than prior to this. And so I think, you know, I take advantage of the park quite often as well.
Yeah. I spoke with Patricia Parks Thompson yesterday, and she said to tell you hello. She does your public relations and outreach to the community. And she was saying that in her family, David, that as horrible as the pandemic is, there's been a lot of good that's come out of it as far as her family, you know, mm-hmm, spending time with the children, riding bikes together, playing games, eating meals at the same table, cooking at home. You know, have you found that too? Are you, I guess you have children that are grown. Is that?
So my kids are grown. But certainly my significant other and I and her daughter have had it's been wonderful, you know, because you mentioned the three things right there, that just being able to spend time together as a family, playing games and really, you know, interacting, you know, has been wonderful. And just, you know, eating and cooking. I love to cook. We both love to cook. And so it's been, you know, we joke that we've probably eaten a lot more and a lot better food than previously, because we're very intent, you know, and purposeful in what we cook, mm-hmm, and how we cook it, you know.
Yeah, I know. I think we have to watch our quantity over here. It's like there's a lot of good food, but quantity can be an issue. So, David, I'd like to please pause for Discover Lafayette's Past, and we'll be right back. Discover Lafayette's Past is brought to you by Rally Marketing, a full-service digital marketing agency that can assist you with marketing automation, content development, search engine optimization, and ways to use social media as a moneymaker for your business. Rally Marketing is there to help you with all the latest ways to market online effectively. For more information, please visit rallymarketing.com. And now the moment, which focuses on the history of the Albert A. Mickey Domang Center, details of which I obtained from Lafayette Memories on Facebook through a post by Patty Credor. I thank her for this loving tribute to a great man who made a big difference in our community. The Domang Center is currently slated to be closed by our local government, and citizens are clamoring to keep it open to serve the recreational needs of North Lafayette. When Mickey Domingue took over the duties of Superintendent of Parks and Recreation for the City of Lafayette in 1946, the city owned two parks. Through the hard work of Mr. Domingue and many, many dedicated others, it grew to 27 areas, comprising over 900 acres of land. He was also responsible for implementing programs such as the Golden Age Club, Lafayette Parish Youth Baseball, Black Recreation, the Park Advisory Board, youth basketball and football, youth and adult softball, water safety, tennis, youth council, teenage council, self-defense, junior track and field, and many more. Mr. Domingue dedicated 32 plus years to ensuring that Lafayette's youth and adults could enjoy the benefits of the recreation facilities for exercise, family enjoyment, and team sports. The residents of Lafayette would not be the same without the work put forth by Mickey Domingue and everyone that were also dedicated to the youth of the area. We here at Discover Lafayette are hopeful that this center will somehow be allowed to stay open as our local youth direly need wholesome and positive places to stay active. Welcome back to Discover Lafayette. We're with David Calicod speaking about the COVID-19 pandemic. So David, in your career, when you trained for the position you hold now, was there any training? Is this like training to handle hurricanes and earthquakes and other disasters?
So I'm tired of hearing the word unprecedented, you know, but this truly, we're going through a time that, you know, I think as we, you know, 10 years from now, we look back at it, this is going to be such a unique and significant experience for not only the country, but the world. And so nothing prepares you for this. And what I do believe is that the culture we've created at Lafayette General has prepared us to thrive in this environment because of the way we communicate, the way we adapt, and the way we innovate. And so I think it's allowed us to do well. But certainly nothing can prepare you for this. I equate it to, you know, sort of when I came here from Indiana, and in Indiana we had tornadoes. And tornadoes, you know, there was a siren, you had a tornado, and then you cleaned up after it, okay? And then I moved down here and discovered this thing called hurricanes, and you sort of know it's coming for a week, and you know, you're looking at the path of it, and that anticipation of it in most cases is worse than the actual storm, you know? And so with this, I mean, this is something that is going on for months and months and months. I mean, we're probably 18 months of going through this at the minimum. And I also think that there are aspects of healthcare and our society that are going to be changed forever because of this. So all of that to say, I don't know that any of us, you know, could fully be prepared for this, but I do believe that we have the skill set and we have the culture that's allowed us to do well.
Right. They're probably going to be rewriting some medical textbooks after this is over, you know, from what you've learned as a medical community.
Well, and you think about the impact and the growth of telemedicine. The last time we were together, we talked about it, and we were laying the foundation for our telemedicine program 4 and 5 years ago. Yeah. And it's fundamentally changed the way people interact with their doctors. Mm-hmm. And certainly, you know, what we've seen is that, you know, there are times when a patient probably shouldn't go into the office. You know, in our oncology, our cancer centers of Acadiana, we're doing a lot of those visits now before they start their chemo. We're doing those virtually, and that's better for the patient. Mm-hmm. You know, and so then you got to ask yourself, well, why weren't we doing that before?
Right.
And so I think the genie's out of the bottle. Mm-hmm. Related to telemedicine. And just within our employed physician group, you know, we're doing so many telemedicine visits now that I would never have thought that, we would be at 16,000 telemedicine visits within Lafayette General from zero prior to March, at 16K today, when we last time we were together, we talked about Health Anywhere, which is our mm-hmm. our app that you can use to do an urgent care visit, and we're now at 2,300 urgent care visits via the app, and all of that is changing the way healthcare is being delivered. And I think as we look at going forward, it then changes the decisions you make. Mm-hmm. What do our offices look like? How big are the waiting rooms? Why do we have waiting rooms? Mm-hmm. Why do we congregate sick people into a waiting room? In general, excluding COVID,
which we've always wondered anyway, as we sit there,
there's gonna be a lot of things change out of this. Mm-hmm.
I have a question about the telemedicine. I've heard some healthcare providers, and it might have been more in the social worker realm, they're reimbursed by insurance the same as an in-person visit. Can you touch on that? Is there any discrepancy in how reimbursement is done if it's telehealth versus in-person?
So at the beginning of this, one of the things that the government did is they immediately, for Medicare patients, Medicaid patients, said you can go ahead and do those telemedicine visits and we'll pay for those. Unfortunately, many of the insurance companies have not followed suit, and so we're still, because of our statewide presence that we have, we're providing telemedicine for the entire LSU health system, from Lafayette General. Actually LSU is in total, all of LSU, and other companies that are statewide. We've had better, we've been able to get them to cover those visits, but for a lot of the private physicians, they're still not covering it. And so, we have to get to the point where all insurances are covering telemedicine. I think from the insurer perspective, they were afraid that the volume would just explode and people would overuse it. And we're trying to convince them that in many cases, it's a better way to deliver that care.
Right.
I think we still have a long way to go in convincing mm-hmm. that.
Right. One of the things I learned from you, and I remember I had no idea what a social determinant of health was, and now I'm immersed in it through different avenues, including Beacon Community Connections, which I know you're very close with. And I've learned just from doing this podcast, David, that, the prisoners in jail, many of the homeless population, these sectors have really been spared from the disease, from COVID. And it's amazing to me that people either that are homeless in homeless shelters or even in the jail situation. I know that they're in pods where they separate people, but they've really been spared. But I'm curious about the overall picture. What are you seeing? Because University Hospital is under your realm. Do you have much information on that, about maybe the underserved segment, people that don't have insurance, that don't have a home or, stability?
Well, the one thing I will say about this pandemic is that it's been difficult finding statistics and information that are true and reliable and trustworthy, and because depending on what you search, there will be five different articles that have five different opinions about what's going on, And so in regard to jails and in regard to the homeless population, there's conflicting studies going on. What is true is that this virus is an equal opportunity sort of virus. It affects all populations. If you have certain comorbid conditions, you're going to get sicker on average, And so, you know, the one thing I would say is that part of the studies about the homeless is just the fact that, you know, getting that information, aggregating that data is very difficult because by definition, they're homeless and they don't seek care. And so from a jail perspective, there's been, you know, wide variation from state to state. You know, you go to a state like Arkansas, they've had almost a 20% positivity rate within their prison population. Oh. But you go to Virginia on the East Coast and it's like 1%, you know? Yeah. And so it's dependent on the state, and it's dependent certainly on the prevalence of the virus in those in those communities. So I've just clarified that. It hasn't like spared that part of our society. But, you know, I think what we've learned with social determinants of health is that, you know, if you have housing issues, if you have food insecurity, and if you have transportation issues, it leads to a whole host of health problems. And if you peel that layer of an onion one layer further and you look at, well, what's the why behind those? And in many cases, it is, you know, long-standing issues in the community, either the neighborhoods that folks live in, the availability of fresh food and produce in those neighborhoods, all leading to things like diabetes and heart disease and obesity. And, you know, and so what we found with this disease is that if you have those three factors and you get it and you're above the age of 60, it's going to be a rough course of the disease for you. So, you know, I would just clarify, you know, first that I think the virus is affecting all populations, but, you know, no matter what race you are or what socioeconomic group you come from, if you have comorbid conditions that reduce your lung capacity, or your body is taxed because of reduced cardiac capacity, or you're obese, it's going to be difficult if you have this.
As people present to the hospital, I don't know if this is evolving, but if someone does present with COVID and they've got these comorbidities, you know, has the treatment protocol been evolving? You know, is it different treating a child, let's say, that people are like, why did this child get it, versus somebody that's over 60, obese, with high blood pressure and diabetes? Are there things that the doctors are learning? I know that they were thinking ventilators were the best way to go at first, and now that's evolving. But is it evolving how, when somebody presents, do you categorize, okay, we need to do this first?
So always scary when a couple non-clinical folks talk.
Yeah, no, here we are. We write a book on this.
And so, you know, I'm going to share with you some things I've learned from Dr. Logue, our chief medical officer, and others on our medical staff, Brad Broussard in particular, who is one of our leading critical care docs. But obviously the treatment protocol has changed dramatically from when this started till today. I mean, in the beginning, patients were, you know, being put on a ventilator very quickly. Now we know that you need to wait as long as possible to do that. We're using all types of other means to increase, you know, airflow and lung capacity, CPAP, BiPAP units, which are proven to be better for the patient. We're now using steroids on patients very quickly, and remdesivir, which is one of the drugs that's been in the media quite a bit, also has had really good effects and has helped patients. So, you know, we're having fewer patients go to the ICU than in the beginning, and fewer of those ICU patients going on ventilators. And so one of the reasons why, you know, we have a lot more patients now than we had back in March and April, one of the reasons we're able to
to take care of more patients today is that the length of stay for both med-surg COVID admissions has basically dropped in half, and the length of stay in the hospital and the ICU also has dropped in half. And so we have more capacity because we've learned better ways to treat these patients. And the one thing I'll say about the medical community, both here and in the state and across the country, is that everybody has been willing, able, and you know, everybody's sharing information in a way that I've never seen before. And so that learning that has occurred across the health system has helped patients throughout the entire country.
It's the information flow. We all know about Tony Fauci, you know, Dr. Fauci. And I know that Tina Stefanski is our local, she's the, Region 4 for the Department of Health. Did the hospital chiefs talk directly with the Faucis, or does it flow down the food chain? How do you guys get the best information?
Well, yeah, I don't think Dr. Logos picked up the phone and said, "Hey, Tony, hey, what, you know?"
Yeah, well, maybe one day.
You know, she did a great job she was in a press conference with the governor the other day, but yeah. Both she and Dr. Henry Kaufman at Lourdes, who serves as CMO there. But, you know, for us, the benefit of us being in our partnership and soon to be merger with Ochsner, is that Dr. Robert Hart and other leaders at Ochsner have very strong connections in D.C. and connections with some of the, you know, major academic medical centers across the country. And so Dr. Logue and Dr. Hart have been in contact on a daily basis, and we've been able to share best practices across the system, you know, and certainly if you look at what happened in March and April, Ochsner and New Orleans was the epicenter, you know, and so they were going through a lot of this back then, and we learned from it. And then as the wave sort of hit us a couple weeks later, we were in a much better position. We were much more prepared than we would have been had we not had that partnership. And so from an industry perspective, you certainly have the AMA and other physician-related groups. And then in the hospital industry, there's the American Hospital Association. My day now is consumed with WebEx and Zoom meetings. And so, you know, we have really, you know, in many cases, daily or weekly updates and information that's being shared via those, you know, those groups as well.
Right. One of the things you said a moment ago really caught my interest about we may have 18 months of this dealing with the pandemic. Is that with the information that's being shared? And I didn't bring up the current numbers that we have. I know that we're a hotbed here in Region 4 in Acadiana. I don't even know what the point is if people don't wear masks and take care of themselves. And we just seem to be fighting it collectively as a group, not individuals, but the collective spirit seems to be, heck no, don't tell me what to do. Yet 18 months, you know, is that kind of what the common thought is?
Yeah. And I think, you know, you have the issue of fast tracking a vaccine. You have hundreds of companies working on vaccines. Folks need to understand that, I mean, there's a lot of trial and error. You know, vaccines may start out and have a lot of promise, but as they go further in the study, they may prove not to be effective. And so you've got to get through the process of, you know, finding the right vaccine, then mass producing that vaccine, and then figuring out ways to deliver it, you know, to everyone. And so that's a very difficult process, and it's going to take time. And so that's a number that I've heard routinely, 18 sort of as a best case scenario, and 24 months as sort of a worst case scenario. But, you know, to this issue about masks, I mean, first I want to say that there are more people wearing masks today than there were a month ago.
Right.
And I think it's a fact, it's from the fact that the disease is so prevalent, the illness is so prevalent in Acadiana that everybody has a family member, they have a coworker that has had this now. And I think people are recognizing that it's real. And so you need to wear your mask, not necessarily to protect yourself if you're wearing a cloth mask. You're protecting everybody else because you don't know if you have it. One family that all five members of the family tested positive and only one of them had symptoms.
Wow.
You know, so you got four people walking around. Mm-hmm. Asymptomatic, and they're spreading it, right? And so that's why you wear a mask. It dramatically reduces your ability to transmit the illness to somebody else. And so you're doing this as a way to protect your community. You're being neighborly. You're actually doing something that is civically very responsible for the community. And so I think if we all want to get back to work, if we all want kids to go back to school, if we all want our economy to start coming around, and for people down here, if we all want to go to a football game and actually enjoy the fall,
one of the five F's.
we need to wear masks, you know? And so I just urge everyone to do it, and it is not it's not something where folks are taking away your rights, and it's not a political thing. It's about doing what is it's a civic duty, you know, to help protect your neighbor from this. And the other thing I would say is that we're learning so much now about the symptoms of this illness, you know, and so I know of another family that four people in the family, they all had significantly different manifestations of this illness, you know, respiratory symptoms, GI symptoms, fever, headache. No one in that family had the same symptoms.
Yeah.
Okay. And people were mildly sick and some were severely sick. Same family under the same roof. Mm-hmm. So the moral to that story is if you're sick, if you feel sick, just stay home. Don't go out.
Yeah, no matter what. Yeah.
No matter what, just stay home.
Right.
There's no honor in going to work sick right now. Mm-hmm. And I would just urge your listeners to wear a mask. And if you feel sick, stay home.
Right. I heard yesterday on the radio that Amazon has decided not to really open up its work campuses. Is it Amazon? I don't know if I may be wrong about this. One of this, I think it might've been a software attack, but until August 2021, and they were looking at, because of the school system, people need to make decisions for the year. Are they going to homeschool or send their kids to school? And I did have a question about that, and I apologize for not remembering what the, it was a large company. What are your thoughts on the schools reopening? Are you willing to share that? You know, do you think it's gonna go well?
Well, I know there's been lots of discussions, and the one thing I would tell you, our local school board, Lafayette Parish School Board in particular, has been very diligent in terms of really evaluating what really should occur. And so I think with every community, the amount of disease of illness present in the community, the prevalence of that illness is going to drive the kind of decisions that they make. Mm-hmm. So if you're in a community that has a really high level of COVID, you probably need to wait a little bit before you go back to school. And so the other thing that I would say is that it's been very different amongst age groups, which is kind of curious. So, you know, and I'm not talking about Lafayette or anybody in particular, but, you know, there are some school systems that are saying, well, K through 5 maybe is handled one way and 6 through 12 is handled another way. And so, you know, children, you know, the ability for them to transmit the disease based on how big they are and that sort of thing, is driving decisions that school systems are making across the country. So, you know, I worry as folks, you know, as kids go back to school, which I agree, kids need to go back to school. Yeah. I think there are some kids, just like there are some adults that do well virtually, and there are others that need to be there and need to have that sort of in-person interaction with folks. And I'd hate to see kids, you know, lose, you know, another semester or a year of education. But I worry about the teachers. I worry about the adults that are there, the administrators there, because kids typically are asymptomatic. And so, like we're seeing now in healthcare, you know, the fact that we have a lot of nurses out is limiting our ability to take care of patients. And so I am concerned that once we sort of get the petri dish of schools back in session, if we don't socially distance, if we don't have the kids wear masks, if we're not really trying to really focus on proper hygiene, that we might see an uptick in virus in every community, not just this.
I don't mean to make light of this, but I had a question about the negative pressure rooms, and Eric Kinesic is our current guest this week from Oceanetics, and he was talking about the nurse saber that they developed, and mm-hmm. be nice if they could have that in all the classrooms, huh? Have all the air just sucked out, all the contaminated air. Would you mind commenting on that? I know that negative air pressure rooms are very expensive to set up and maintain, and he's developed with Dr. Doug Clément, this nurse saber. Are these devices maybe the wave of new technology?
Well, first I'll say is I know Eric and I know Dr. Clément, and I'm excited for both of them, and certainly there's been a lot of innovation across the country, and this is Cajun ingenuity. Mm-hmm. And innovative spirit that we have. Obviously we have some of the units here at Lafayette General, and they've worked with a few of our physicians in regard to sort of refining, it. I think it, as well as other devices that are being developed right now, are really, I think are going to have a great impact on the healthcare system once they're really, operationalized and you really can meet all the needs. I think the one thing that, in particular, the device that Eric and Dr. Clément have developed, you know, it's something where if you don't have the PPE necessary to take care of a patient, that it's vital for you to have. And so when you look at what currently we're in a situation where we have enough PPE and we have enough of our PAPRs, which are sort of these suits that have forced air inside the suit that are protecting the anesthesiologist. We're using that technology because we have it readily available to us. And so I'm excited about what they're doing. I think it's going to have a place in the overall treatment of the of these patients. And again, I just salute them for being so innovative.
Yeah, I do too. Well, thank you for answering that. I think we've covered some of the questions I wanted to ask. And I'm very curious about the Ochsner merger and what it means for Lafayette General Health. What it means for healthcare in our community, if you could segue into that.
Well, you know, it's interesting. A merger is a big deal, and when you merge the two, you know, it's the largest merger of healthcare systems in the history of our state, and that's a big task. And then you throw a pandemic on top of it, and it becomes an even greater task. But we've continued to work through that process, and we We're currently, the agreement is sitting with the Attorney General, and we're awaiting the Attorney General's final approval of the merger. I anticipate in the next few weeks that we'll have an announcement of a public hearing in regard to the merger. And we're anticipating, we're kind of shooting for October 1 as a target for when that might be completed. Again, that's all subject to the approval of the Attorney General and a few other factors. But the teams from both Ochsner and Lafayette General have been working diligently to make sure that it occurs in a smooth a fashion as possible. We've been learning a lot about each other's culture and learning certainly that there are best practices that certainly exist there, as well as Lafayette General, and we're sharing those. And so I'm excited. I'm excited about what it's going to mean for Lafayette General, the future of healthcare in Acadiana. We have well over $450 million of investments that are going to be made in the community over a 10-year period through capital investment and resource and program investment to continue to offer high acuity care in this community, have a level 2 trauma center in this community that'll be the trauma center for all of Southwest Louisiana. And so I couldn't be more excited about the merger and what I think it's going to bring to the community. We know that there's opportunities for us to expand a number of services. And the teams are working diligently to get those plans in place. And so I think there's going to be a number of shovel-ready projects that we'll be announcing to the community to continue to grow what we do across the region.
Will that affect the oil center development? I know there's been talk about expanding, you know, capital improvements, as you were saying. Is that still in the works? Or?
Yeah, I absolutely. I see significant. There will be significant investments made in the oil center, in particular into the main campus. We anticipate in growing the capacity of not only our adult, but also our women's services. And so I think we'll see investment there. We also are looking at making further investments in our cancer center and also our neuroscience center that are both here in Acadiana. But it won't just be in the oil center. I mean, we have projects that we anticipate will be throughout Lafayette Parish and investments that we're making in our partners across the region. And I also anticipate that the number of partnerships that we have across the region is going to continue to grow, particularly with this partnership.
Will it still be named Lafayette General, or will it be Ochsner? How will that pan out, do you think? What's the
plan? So the commitment in the agreement is that Lafayette General will continue to be Lafayette General. The naming conventions that we have, not only for Lafayette General, but for St. Martin, for Acadia General over in Crowley, we anticipate that those core names will continue, and we're still working through the final pieces of the branding, and so I don't have anything to announce today, but what I do know is that those names will continue to be the names that the people in the communities know and are familiar with.
You know, good health care is what we really need, that Lafayette General has been such an important part of, as a community-owned hospital. So that's good. And we'll just see how all that works out. I have one question about your discussion on the Attorney General. Does his office have to approve this because it is community-owned? What is their involvement, or is it just overseeing a large merger? Why would the Attorney General be involved?
Yeah, so any transaction like this, the Attorney General gets involved and must approve. And so similar to what we go through from a federal perspective. So the Hart-Scott-Rodino review, HSR review, also had to be done from a federal level, which is really from an antitrust perspective to make sure you're creating monopoly and that sort of thing. The Attorney General in this case is really reviewing it to make sure that it is it's a proper deal. It's an equitable deal because of our standing in the community, our not-for-profit status, et cetera. And so there, that's what his office is committed to do. But you know, I think throughout this process, we've had really good communication with Jeff and with the Attorney General and his office. And I really don't anticipate. We have no indication that there'll be any issues with that. And we're excited. We're excited to be part or to become part of the Ochsner family, and certainly excited about what it's going to mean for the community.
Right. Are there any questions you anticipated I would ask that I didn't touch on?
Oh gosh, you know, I think everyone keeps asking sort of what's next and when can we get back to normal and. You know, the phase, you know, phase one, phase two, you know, what is, when can we move out of that? And that was something you and I had, in the questions that I did want to address. I think our movement from phase two and to phase one is going to be really dependent on our own behavior, you know? And so I think the more folks wear their masks, the more they wash their hands, the more they socially distance, the more they stay home if they're sick, the sooner we return to some form of normalcy. The reality is for the next 18 months, we're not going to be back to what we were before. And we're probably always going to see folks wearing masks going forward, particularly if they're immunocompromised. And you know, you think about Europe and you think about Asia, you know, that is something that people have done for a long time, but it just wasn't something that folks in the United States did, you know. And so I think we all need to be patient as we sort of move forward with this. We need to pray that a vaccine is developed and it is effective. And we need to just really be diligent and make good choices about how we get together and how we celebrate and how, you know, there's so many things that we didn't even think of before. I read an article today, in University of Florida, they had a gathering of all the anesthesiologists at the hospital and 18 of them got COVID.
Oh no.
Okay. So, you know, now they don't have any anesthesiologists.
And we need them.
Okay. So we all need to make choices in our businesses and in our professional lives. You know, we have since March, we have not been having the number of meetings in person that we used to have. You know, our senior team, I'm purposely not putting us in the same room unless I absolutely have to, because I don't want us all to get sick at the same time, you know? And so as a business, you know, everyone needs to be making those decisions. And as a family, you also need to be making those decisions with your loved ones who perhaps are immunocompromised or they do have those comorbid conditions. And, you know, we've got to get to where we're being mindful of that, certainly throughout this process. But I think it's going to be a long haul. We need to all continue to be patient, and we need to all continue to try to do the right thing civically in terms of protecting others as much as we possibly can.
And we've seen that, like you said, with the staffing issues. You know, even if you have the beds available, the hospitals and the healthcare providers have to be able to greet those patients and be, you know, able to take care of them. And I'm sure you've read all the books or many of the books on the Spanish flu pandemic, and it was about 18 months. It was the same course, but it was with much worse consequences, many more deaths. So,
and you know what, I wish there was more memory in our collective memory bank of what happened in 1918. Mm-hmm. It's like it just got wiped.
Gone.
You know? Yeah. And there's not a lot of, obviously it was, you know, a long time ago, but we went through something like this before. You know, we went through polio, we went through, you know, and I think folks just, you just forget, you know, you remember the good things, you try to forget the bad things, but you're absolutely right. You know, when this is said and done, I mean, you look at the Spanish flu and the percentage of the population of the world that ended up contracting it at the end, which I think was like one third or maybe one half of the population. You know, this virus is incredibly contagious, you know? And so, you know, I get frustrated when people keep quoting the numbers that there's only been so many infections and so many deaths and so many, you know, it's just slowly making its way. And by the time we get to the end of this cycle, I think we're going to see numbers that are very startling and very similar to the Spanish flu. But again, we've all deleted that from our collective memory bank.
I know. Well, history does repeat itself and we're living it. And I'm just grateful that we have you in charge of Lafayette General. And I want to thank you for your friendship and your leadership in our community and for making time to be here today with us on Discover Lafayette. And Lafayette General has been a generous sponsor of our show. And I just want to thank you all for that, for your leadership in allowing us to do this podcast.
And I appreciate so much, you know, your show and also what you do for the community, not only on the show, but also in many other aspects of your life. So thank you.
Thank you. Well, David Callicott has been our guest, CEO and president of Lafayette General Health. Please share this podcast with your friends. I think people need to hear his words of wisdom and just the reality of what we need to do as a community, a nation, and a world to move on from this pandemic. I want to thank you all for listening. You can find this podcast and all of our podcasts at discoverlafayette.net. Even better, you can subscribe on your phone. You can just go to your podcast app and you'll have this podcast and others delivered every Friday morning. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Iberia Bank, Lafayette General Health, Raider Solutions, and Rally Marketing for all they do to make our show possible. Thank you for joining us.